Welcome to the Modern Miss Mason podcast. My name is Leah Bowden, longtime student of Charlotte Mason's work and practitioner of her methods. I love to share my research, reading, tips and tricks as I travel this rewarding journey, and I delight in helping others get the most out of theirs too. Through these conversations, I'll introduce you to fellow homeschooling mums, experienced teachers and practitioners, and expert voices in the subjects that Charlotte Mason encourages as part of the Feast of Education. I hope I can help you find the fun and the freedom in her philosophy. Hello, my friends, and welcome to another episode of the Modern Miss Mason podcast. I can't believe it's been a whole week since we hung out together in this space, but I'm so glad you've chosen to come back. We're definitely feeling the change of season here in England. The days are getting shorter. Next weekend we change the clocks, so it will be darker a lot earlier. I have some cute pumpkins in my fireplace that I managed to pick up from a farm shop last weekend. And I am definitely lighting more candles and drinking more tea. So many of you already know, I send out a monthly newsletter called Notes from the Park. If you haven't signed up for that, if you don't receive that yet, click the link in the bio of any of my social media platforms, or you can click the link in the details of this podcast, which will give you the option to sign up for the newsletter. Well, one of the unique features of the newsletter is that I always send out an original poem, kind of testing my poetry out on my email subscribers. Well, I've never done this before, but I thought that I would share one with you today on the podcast and just read one of the pieces out. Well, this is one that I included in last month's newsletter, and it's called Grow. I hope you enjoy it. Grow. I see shoots pushing through the cracks in the crazy paving. I see the uninvited wild and mossy green carpeting the garden wall. I see buds in the winter as I brush off the snow in silence and solitude. Developing slow. I see boots trampling those paths and cats climbing that wall when winter seems dead and you see nothing at all. I see tomorrow and light breaking through. I see signs of life and what I know is in you. Take my hand, sister. Let me point to what's new. Eyes forward. Chin up. Let's walk into true. Well, have I got a treat for you today? I have been eagerly anticipating sharing this conversation with you because I know so many of you love her. Today's guest is a mother, a grandmother, a author, a speaker, a businesswoman, an advocate for all things homeschooling, and a friend to many. It is, of course, our very treasured Julie Bogart. Julie is a veteran home educator and has used her wisdom, experience, and education to sow wholeheartedly into the homeschooling arena. Julie and I met virtually many years ago on Periscope when we both were hopping on regularly to share our homeschool stories. Her obviously very much further down the road than I was, but we instantly enjoyed each other's company online, and thankfully, thankful to the Wild and Free community, our paths have crossed in real life. Julie and I have spoken at two Wild and Free conferences together at the same time. She classically dances her way onto the stage and on stage whilst I am very much more British in my introductions. But I love her company and we have enjoyed some great conversation. And the last time we were together was last year in February. We were both in Frisco near Dallas doing a Wild and Free conference, and she had just launched The Brave Learner, her book. So on the flight from London to Dallas, I downloaded the audiobook and devoured it for my whole journey, and I absolutely loved it. I was so intent on having read the whole book before I got to hang out with Julie again, and I was able to tell her how much I loved it. And I know so many of you have enjoyed her writing. Maybe you are part of the Brave Learner Home. Maybe you've used the Brave Writer curriculum. And I know there are so many ways that your paths have probably crossed with Julie online, because she is such a positive, encouraging voice of wisdom into the homeschooling arena. Well, I know you're going to love this conversation. There is some Charlotte Mason gold throughout this whole chat today, and you might even want to listen to it twice just to take notes and just be in awe of her story, because I absolutely love this conversation. So I started our chat, as I have been doing with most people on in this season, by asking her, how did you first meet Charlotte Mason?
I met her in a very homeschooly way. Somebody loaned me their copy of For the Children's Sake by Susan Schaefer McCauley, and that was the first time I had ever heard of Charlotte Mason or her PNE youth schools. And I read that book like a person starving. I read it with so much eagerness for this natural learning experience that homeschoolers kept telling me about. So that was my very, very first introduction.
When was that, Julie? Can we have a little timeline on this?
Yeah, so
I love these stories.
It goes back a long way. It was probably 1990, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah, might have even been 89. It was before I was homeschooling. And
so the book
honestly, that book
was published in 84. So I know it's been doing the rounds ever since, hasn't it?
Yes. And it's quite possible that I read it. Noah was born in 87. And so it could have easily been even that year. But okay. I knew about homeschooling starting in 1984. It's the first time I had ever heard of the words home and school put together to make a compound word. And got interested in it quickly. A little note on my personal biography, I was living in North Africa at the time and worked as a missionary. And so I knew families who were home educating, and they were the ones who gave me all of my referrals. So it was one of them who happened to have the book, and I read it. And then in the 1990s, maybe mid-90s, I was attending a church at the time that did a women's Bible study that focused just on that book. So I went through it multiple times, and I really had a vision. Yeah.
That's amazing. I was talking to somebody recently, interviewing somebody who has met Susan Schaefer McCauley and knows her from working. I think they did some work together in the 80s. And her isn't that an incredible legacy that book has? I mean, still today I see people recommending it as,
totally.
You know, where should I start with Charlotte Mason? What an amazing legacy and a story that she, and someone kind of described it like a conversation starter, or it kind of whets the appetite before you launch into anything else. And I know it definitely did. That was the first book I read, maybe just after lots of blogs, because I came into homeschooling when blogs were the thing.
Yes. Well, and just a little fun side note on that story. I've met Susan and her mom, Edith. I actually attended Labrie in Switzerland in the 80s and was sitting at the table with Edith and Francis.
Wow.
And Prisca. And then in the 90s, which we'll get into, in the 2000s, which we'll get into, yes. I was a part of a homeschool support group that was all focused on Charlotte Mason. And we went to this Labrie conference where Edith and Susan both spoke. Edith was not speaking. She was actually quite infirm at that stage of her life. But I remember I was about to get on an elevator and the door opened, and there she was with her walker and her handler. And I was able to say like my own kind of goodbye. She didn't remember me, of
Oh,
course,
wow.
but I, of course, remembered her, and she died not long after that. So I've had an interesting relationship personally for myself with the Schaefer family over the years, and have always loved their work, loved Edith's book about, you know, home and
home.
Yes.
Yes.
Right.
That's
The
amazing.
hidden art. Yeah. That book was incredible.
Because I may be jumping the gun here, but I feel like the 1984, when that book was published, and then obviously in the 80s, the Andreolas
yes.
republished the six volumes, there was almost this surge of understanding about the Charlotte Mason philosophy. There was suddenly, it came to the forefront of educators' minds, probably predominantly Christian at
yes.
the time.
Yes.
And then I feel, now you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like we've almost had, it kind of dipped. If there was a graph in front of us, it almost dipped a little bit. And I feel like when the early 2000s, there's almost been this peak again of, and I don't know if it's to do with technology or it just felt like this philosophy and these ideas came back to the forefront of people's minds. But yet it's been taken hold of by a wider community and by a wider group of people. Would you agree with that?
I think that is a pretty accurate interpretation. So my story started with For the Children's Sake, but I immediately fell in love with Karen Andreola's Charlotte Mason Companion.
Companion,
and
yeah.
Catherine Levison's
yes.
Charlotte Mason Education. Those two books for me gave me sort of the nuts and bolts, because the homeschool series, which I've read and have, you know, the six volumes, and they're marked up. I mean, I love
yes.
them, but yeah. there was something very rambly about her writing style, and it was enjoyable to read interpretations, ways
sure.
that people implemented that vision in their own very American lives. I was an American, so of course that's what I was looking for.
Of course.
And I found myself in a group of moms. There were five of us, and we met once a month for brunch, and we worked our way through Karen Andreola's book. And each month we would do, you know, several chapters. And she is so cute how she has lines at the end of each page.
I
at
know.
Chapters so you could write
I
notes.
Filled those in.
So we would compare our notes. And we did that for about a year. And then I moved to Ohio. And this is my favorite part of this story. During that time, I was online, brand new, late 1990s. And yeah. I was a part of a Charlotte Mason email list. And there were many. But I was a part of the one that became Ambleside Online. I remember
oh, wow.
when they were recruiting people to write and to join this, you know, very volunteer-driven project. It was, you know, quite an amazing group. A lot of my formation as a business owner, eventual business owner, and as a homeschooler happened in that group. And then I moved from California away from all these close friends to Ohio, where I knew no one. And at least I still had this online connection that
yes.
sustained me, which I think is what was new. You know, there was a way to leave your community and not lose a community because of email lists. That was brand new.
Right.
And at the time, I joined up with an Ohio support group, and I was there for my very first meeting. And on the back table, there was a little flyer that said that Catherine Levison was coming from Washington to Dayton, Ohio, to do a workshop.
No way.
The next weekend.
Wow.
You
were like,
in
yes!
Ohio for like 3 weeks. So I literally signed up and went to that meeting, and it was fabulous. I remember being just blown away. It was 2 days. She had us do copy work and dictation as adults. She had
Brilliant.
Us examine an acorn as a nature study. She had us talk about a piece of art. And I was like, if I ever do conferences in my life, this is what we're doing. We are going
yes.
to be active. We're going to implement. And from that experience, I started attending this monthly meeting, which is about 35, 40 minutes from where I live now, and eventually ended up in that steering committee for Charlotte Mason. I became the spokesperson for writing and literature. And then we threw many conferences. We did multiple over those years. And then eventually attended the one where we met Susan and Edith, who were our idols at the time. So that is
wow.
my journey with Charlotte. She's been very important to me.
So important. So how did it look in your home, because if I followed you since probably Periscope days, Julie, when we were both on there, and just followed your journey over the power of many years, that is, and there was always this flavor of Charlotte Mason coming through. And you I remember you telling this story, I've heard it a few times, just done I think you do a talk, the modern Charlotte Mason, or something like that, 21st century Charlotte Mason. But you have seemed to have this beautifully rounded approach to education that almost it pulls in things from in different places too. How did it look? How did you implement it when your children were young? Were you quite, did you want to get it kind of all right and like everybody else was doing? Or did you always have your own flavor to it?
I think I'm not good at doing things right.
No, neither am I.
Just as a personality type. But yep. I will tell you, I think what Charlotte did for me, there were two things that were really foundational right out of the gate. And the first one was she valued children as persons. Right. When Charlotte says children are born persons, that aligned really well with my parenting philosophy, which had grown out of La Leche League and attachment parenting and this notion that when you regard a child, you're looking at a person who has full access to their feelings, their thoughts, right. their needs, and their desires. This is not someone who's a blank canvas and I'm supposed to shape them into some image that suits me. My job is to keep getting to know them better and making a life that is more suited to that person. So when Charlotte said that, it reminded me of Charles Dickens. You know, it's this late 19th century vision of what it means to be a valuable human being that really flew in the face of the factory workers, the child labor, the feeling that there were some expendable people and education was for this elite class. And I could see how those threads were really a part of her work and they just really moved me. So I think that was like my first introduction to her had to do with this personhood. And of course, the way Susan Schaefer McCauley painted the picture was also shaped by the way her family interpreted learning to begin with, which is this feast of ideas, these lengthy, delicious dinners where you talk about, you know, the meaning of life. Like they were excessively interested in making life beautiful. And, you know, I was living in a tiny condo with five kids in Southern California, and I didn't know how to be a beautiful life maker. So I wanted that for my family. So I painted a wall yellow in my apartment. I started putting flowers on the table. I think my earliest sort of risk that I took with Charlotte was around art appreciation. I found myself attracted to this idea that art could be a conversation partner with writing. And so,
very good.
Yeah, so I started watching the Sister Wendy Story of Painting videos with my kids just hovering in the room. And we started doing art narration. And I really think that was the beginning of getting hooked on Charlotte for me.
Dr. Carol Smith of the Charlotte Mason Institute, he described me as this, he said, oh, you kind of represent the new generation of homes of Charlotte Mason educators. And I thought, yeah, you know what? That is the difference. I think in the 80s, you were introduced to this person and we here in the early 2000s came in on this program. And I've had to almost unpick my way through that, as helpful as it has been. I would never, just kind of make anything small about what's been created or what's been formed to help people. But actually, we teach history. We say, let's introduce the children to the person, don't we?
Yes.
And I think that's what I've been trying to fight for 15 years.
Wow.
Help me get to know the person.
Leah, that's such an interesting distinction. And I think because initially there wasn't the internet. So between 84 and about 97, you know, there was nobody commenting except ourselves on what we were taking from Charlotte. So we had, we had our own reading. We had Karen Andriola. We had Catherine Levison. We had Susan Schaefer McCauley. But that was, you know, a very slim number of books to read. And let me tell you, before the internet, we read full books and we read them multiple times. My Charlotte Mason six volume series is littered with margin notes, underlines, highlights, question marks, because I didn't have anything else to turn to. That's what I was going back to again and again. When we got into the internet era, we were suddenly greeted, and on this one email list, which was massive, thousands of people, we were greeted with everybody's personal interpretation. And of course, whenever you gather a group of people who've all interpreted the same text, you're going to wind up with a wide variety of emphases. So let me say this as an educator. There is no such thing as a right interpretation. This is what I tell my students when I teach at university. We don't come to a text to try and figure out what the truest meaning is. All texts, including Charlotte Mason, have two things operating whenever we go to interpret them. The first one is what we call the horizon of the writer. So Charlotte wrote from her own experience during a period of history with certain social conditions present, and she was operating with whatever level of insight and awareness she had at the time.
Right.
And then she communicates her ideas. So the first thing we do is we try to assess what those are. You know, we talk about that it was the late 19th century, early 20th century, and we examine the social context and the location of where she wrote. But then what happens with interpretation is the interpreter also has their own horizon. So we are reading Charlotte today in the beginning of the 21st century, 100 years later, and we bring our own assumptions and social context and awareness to what we read. And when a historian goes to make an interpretation, they are creating a fusion of those two horizons to create a unique, fresh interpretation. So what was going on in the 80s and early 90s is people without the internet were bringing their current understanding of child psychology and parenting and homeschooling to what they read of Charlotte's and creating a version of what Charlotte wrote for their family. Once the internet hit, we had a much bigger cacophony of voices. We now have the internet influencing how we read, how we think, what we're doing with what we read and think. And it evolves again. And your astute observation that we went from being introduced to a person to a system is often what happens when anything becomes popular.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah.
So at the beginning, we didn't know who she was. Suddenly now we have Charlotte Mason experts who believe they know who she was. And instead of unfolding the who she was-ness to new people, they systematize what they've learned and turned it into a method.
Right.
And this happens with everybody. This happens universally in education circles. And getting back to that sort of story behind the method is how you can start to untangle yourself from prescriptive learning and make it personal again.
And that is, I mean, this is what I talk about on here all the time. That is, we have to find, I talk about finding the freedom within the philosophy. And I think it's almost, I took years unpicking kind of other people's ideas and unpicking what I thought I should do. And again, my personality doesn't stick to rules very well. I can't even follow a recipe without changing it.
Yes.
So I'm kind of like, okay, I know this has to work for my family. I'm not going to be so prescriptive that they have to change for this. But I can see these truths in it. I can see this beauty and this approach to childhood and motherhood and education that is bringing out good stuff. But yeah, I think that we've had some work cut out for us to figure out, get back to the basics, back to the beginning of who was this woman and what did she have to say. And I think that's why we are sent back to the six volumes. But you're right, not everyone can read them. Not everyone can follow those books. And I ended up was with Carol Angiola, Catherine Levison. I read all those books as well and decided then to slowly do my journey. I didn't want to rush it. I wasn't going to come to any, so, you know, assumptions. So when I started periscoping and started to share the little bits I'd learned, I think I was 8 years in by then.
Wow.
And I think I waited, you know, I thought, no, I'm going to do my time here. I want to really get to grips with some of this. And there is this temptation, I think, with social media that to begin a journey and feel like you've got to know it all, feel like you've got to share it all,
feel like you've got to get it, have all, you know, and goodness, if anyone can go anywhere to find the freedom in homeschooling, it's your spaces where you are constantly saying, hey, take your time, find your place, do what's right for your children. And that's why your voice is so, so important right now, and has been for a long time, but more than ever. What the messages you're sending out there, Julie, are just bringing people into places of freedom for their children and for themselves as mothers. So yeah, I mean, thank you for that. Amazing.
Well, you're right about one thing especially, and that is we tend to think that we don't have time. That's we say it all the time. I'm busy, I'm rushed, I don't have time, I don't have time for this. Actually, that's all we have.
Yeah,
it's all we have.
It's true.
When I first found out about art and art history and art narration, I didn't also try to take up all the other ideas that Charlotte was teaching.
Right.
I didn't also do nature. We weren't looking at poetry the way she teaches it. We weren't trying to do composition according to her ideas, because you cannot actually master all those things simultaneously.
Right.
And if you go deep into one aspect, all the riches that she's trying to teach you start to show up, so that when you move to the next item, you actually come from a much more grounded understanding of what you're reading. But if you just go quickly through each of her pieces, and I think this is the problem with systematization, and people try to do it with Brave Writer as well, it robs you of the process that helps you become deep in the practice.
Yeah, that's right. So right. And I absolutely agree.
This is why
agree.
I love your work. This is why Charlotte Mason Unboxed is such a wonderful thing. It's such a patient walk through the journey of Charlotte Mason instead of a big rush. It needs to go slowly. And you have your child's entire childhood to get there. Charlotte didn't write all of her thinking in a day.
Right.
Those six volumes took some time.
Yeah, nearly 35 years. Exactly. I mean, and even when she got to the end, you know, you see it in volume six, she started to kind of change on a few of her ideas. So just when you think you've read volume one and you've grasped it all, I'd say, hang on, just get the whole story arc here. This is a woman's life, and so much has happened. And you're right. I mean, I talk about this a lot, is take an element at a time, slowly introduce it to your children, fall in love with it, you know, find the rich benefits of it in your household. And then when you feel like you've got that down, or you feel everybody's comfortable, then pick up another one if you want.
Exactly.
And I think there's just this pressure to get it all right, get it all done. What if they're behind? All these kind of questions that, and I will say to young moms, especially when they're saying, am I doing enough? And I say, well, initially, even just the question sounds like you're doing too much. Take your lists, take your schedules, take all the stuff that you, all your expectations, cut them in half, possibly start there, and you can add to it, you can build up, but you might not have to. And I still have to practice that. You know, we're 14 years into our journey, and I begin the year and I cut down. I mean, I will create this plan and then I'll cut it down. Like, okay, no, we're not going to do all that. And it's you kind of constantly relearning and re-educating yourself as you go along. But goodness, that's so helpful. And what amazing thoughts, really. And just, I love hearing stories from 80s and 90s and those gatherings and the early communities. It's so, I love it so much. I find it so fascinating of this gathering around this voice, obviously, who was British woman.
That just called up a memory that I have got to share now, because when you said this British woman, I thought, oh, this will really tickle you. So in this, you know, Bible study space where hundreds of women, we were in one of those mega churches,
okay,
and they had this women's Bible study that was going to teach this book. It was run by the two women who were married to the founding pastor. So they were in their 50s. And they had adult daughters who were just starting to raise children. And and this is in Orange County, California, by the way, very, you know, materialistic kind of consumer identity place. And one of them was the one who decided to study this book, and she was doing the teaching. And she said, I mean, I just look at all you young moms, and you have this opportunity to shape the imaginations of your children toward beauty, toward things worthy of their attention, nature, art. And then she turned to her sister. They were sisters and her sisters-in-law. And she turns to her and she says, "What were we doing? Weren't we getting acrylic nails and handing our kids off to a babysitter?" And I'll never forget that, because here are these women who had grown up in this environment who thought, you know, acrylic nails and having your kids go to daycare so that you could have some free time for lunch.
Yeah.
Were caught by this vision for their grandchildren,
wow.
Right?
Yes.
They suddenly saw, and it was this British woman from another century,
right.
You know, who wore long dresses that caught their imagination. And that's how you know that you have a powerful writer on your hands.
Absolutely.
This woman's writings so deeply resonate, so draw us into our best selves. And that, I just want to add this. I've done some graduate work, and my thesis was on a work by Dietrich Bonhoeffer called Letters and Papers from Prison.
Yep.
And his writings there, weirdly, share a common property with the 6-volume series of Charlotte Mason. And I'm going to unfold that to you right now.
Please do. Yeah.
Here's what they have in common. They are two people writing about their expertise in process.
Right.
Over time. So Bonhoeffer's Letters and Papers from Prison are exploratory. He even critiques some of his past writings. He is writing in a way that is letter writing and short notes. There's no publisher. There's no publication date. There's no editor. Charlotte's writings have that similar quality. She's writing over time.
Yeah.
She's writing as the thoughts and the ideas are growing inside of her, and she's recording them as much for herself,
yes,
as for some future audience. Same for Bonhoeffer.
Wow.
What I want to charge your audience to do, and what I've tried to do in my own life, is write your own thoughts.
Love it.
Write your own thoughts.
Yeah.
Be in process. Write them in a narrative, write them in a journal, jot them down in a bullet list. But you are curating ideas, insights, thoughts, beliefs that are going to be valuable, not just to you, but to other people someday, whether it's your children or the community that you're in. You are Charlotte Mason, is my point. You are an education reformer right now.
Yeah,
that's what homeschooling is. We are all doing the work she did. So to become beholden to her and not recognize that you are actually walking alongside, lockstep with Charlotte, creating, revolutionizing education yourself right now, is to miss the whole spirit of everything she wrote.
So good, Julie. Wait, drop the mic. Oh, I love it. I love it. It's so true. And, you know, I feel like that's kind of what I've been trying to do, you know, like I know
it's your exact
yeah
work. And you are literally doing
we
that.
Are and writing this story ourselves, and this is this looks like my, you know, our 21st century British existence within this philosophy and this pedagogy, and what it looks like for my kids who are so different from anybody else's. And
and
it's just beautiful. And if we can actually get to grasp with that and find the freedom in that and come away from this state kind of idea of it has to look a certain way and we've got to tick these boxes and do this, there's so much liberty as a woman, as a home educator, and as a mother, to really start to walk that forward. And that, you know, it's, you know, you're not the first person on the podcast to be saying write it down, be writing your story, you know, start to record your own thoughts and your own
yes,
you know, because it's because everybody has a voice into this. And when I first created Modern Miss Mason, the phrase that came to me with the design that my husband and I worked together on was a place where your face can fit, and the logo is an out, like a silhouette of hers. The idea is that your face can fit. Everybody's face can fit. It's not prescribed to a certain woman and a certain kind of family and a certain kind of worldview. This, everybody's face can fit. And I will continue to fight for that. I mean, and so I'm loving all that you're sharing here. It's amazing, Julie. Well, I know we could go for, on for hours about this stuff, but I want to jump into what the amazing work that you're doing today. Now, would you tell everybody first about the Brave Learner Home and how that came to be? When did you know I've got something to share? I've got something that I can build to help other home educators.
Yeah, thanks for asking about that, because I think it's been my secret dream for over 20 years, even before I knew what the internet was or would be. I've always really grown the best in community.
Yeah.
I love having people who dialogue with me, who want to share their insights, who are interested in mine. And because of that experience of loneliness that can come with homeschooling, you know, you're in your house, you're with your kids, you want to know if what you're doing is the best method. I mean, all the things we're just talking about. I discovered that having these small groups, whether it was my five friends that we homeschooled together, or it was my neighborhood where I happened to have some homeschooling families, those were just really awesome opportunities for me to bounce ideas and get ideas.
Right.
Then the internet came along and facilitated this exchange of ideas at a rate that is unheard of, unprecedented in humankind. And email lists and blogs were the primary way we did that in the 90s and early 2000s, about the time you joined the internet.
Right.
It has now sort of devolved in some ways, also grown in some ways due to social media. Social media has created these Facebook groups and Instagram communities. But one of the things that I've noticed is that the conversations have to be short. They're more soundbite length.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you write 800 words in a Facebook comment, people are going to scroll by it.
Absolutely.
The meaningful engagement isn't there in the way it was in an email list or a blogging circle. And so I was looking for a space that was non-ideological, that welcomed families as they were. I was tired of the online wars about philosophy and methodology and who was doing unschooling right and who understood Charlotte best and what is classical education. Oh, not her, but her. I was tired of all that. What I really wanted was a place where we could invite people with educational backgrounds, various philosophies, parenting expertise, because so much of homeschooling is just flat out parenting. I wanted those voices to speak into our lives, and I wanted a safe space for discussion that was not about proving anything. You don't have to prove that you're good. You just can show up and be. So Periscope, as you mentioned, was this live streaming broadcasting tool that was brand new about 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And that's when I realized that we were finally at a point where we could do some broadcasting that was live. And that's really what I was waiting for. I felt like it needed to be more than a discussion board.
Amazing.
So once I saw the technology catch up to the vision, I knew it was time to pull the trigger.
Okay.
So we created the space called the Homeschool Alliance, and then we rebranded it after my book came out and called it the Brave Learner Home.
So the Alliance only officially started after Periscope had started.
It started like simultaneous to it.
That's amazing. Yeah. I didn't realize that. Okay.
Yeah.
That's great.
We may have started it. It was like 2014.
Sure.
And we were having a hard time doing webinars. I was mostly doing Zoom and anyway, but it was really with Periscope that I saw where it could go, like what it could really be. It's not that old. It's pretty recent.
That's great. And so now you just mentioned The Brave Learner, your fabulous book, which was that last summer. The date's all.
So Leah, we saw each other because it came out in February of 2019. And a week later, we were in Frisco, Texas.
Okay, because so Julie, I listened to the whole of the Brave Learner on the flight from the UK Texas.
That's amazing.
I was like, I want to listen to this whole book. And it was amazing. I want to read a little bit. Can I read some to, there's an expert. I love this. I think this just... it just reflects you, but also your passion for what you do. It says this: on some intuitive level, I knew that learning had to be more than the mastery of facts. I've experienced it as an adult. I become consumed with a subject like quilting or preparing yogurt cultures, and that topic takes over my life. Fabric scraps scattered on the floor, little jars of white sludge cuddled by blankets on my kitchen countertops. When I learned to play guitar in my 30s, no one had to schedule my practices. My guitar lived on a stand in the living room and I tormented our ears multiple times a day until my fingers bled. Passion for learning has that fiery, consuming, can't stop quality. Oh, I love that, Julie, so much. How, I mean, what was that like writing, finally seeing a book published with your passion and ideas out on the bookshelves, in people's homes, on people's nightstands? What does that feel like?
Gosh, it's so interesting. You know, I grew up with publishing. So my mother is the author of over 70 books. So I've seen a lot of drafts become physical books.
Yes.
And I always worried that I'd write a book that no one would read. I've watched books get published and they go into remainders, which means off the shelves. Yeah. Nobody buys them 2 years later. And so for me, the actual publishing was a fingers crossed moment.
Sure.
What I was really excited to see is if people would read it and resonate with it.
Yeah.
And so the greatest joy of all for me is seeing how widely well received it's been.
Oh, it must have been.
So many people quoting it, writing me their stories. The writing of the book, we often say this in the writing world, the writing of the book is a gift first to yourself.
Yeah.
It's a chance to take all that stuff that's floating around inside and then to really bring it together into some kind of, you know, tangible representation of that thinking. So that part is also deeply satisfying, but it's really the engagement with the audience that has made this just an exceptionally joyful journey for me. And yeah, I love it. It turned out to be everything I hoped it would be. And how often can you say that about any experience?
Not very often. And I am so, so pleased. And I'm assuming this is just the beginning of many books that you'll be bringing out for us.
I'm actually right now, except for this lovely exception for you, I am taking a social media break and I am focused on my next book, which is all about critical thinking in the digital age.
Oh,
so
amazing.
Hopefully it'll be a good one for kids and parents again.
That sounds amazing. Incredible. The book, I mean, it's in a couple of languages now, isn't it? I occasionally,
how fun is that? It's in so many languages. I keep laughing.
Wow.
Southeast Asia is good, man. They've got Chinese and Thai and Korean. I have Polish and Russian. I mean, what?
That is amazing. But the fact that that message is getting out to so many places, that must be so rewarding. Well, I mean, this goes without saying, you're such a voice of strength in the homeschool community worldwide, as you must be able to start to understand from the impact of your words and your consistent work. But I know a lot of mums and other women listening or just watching your life. I often want to know, you know, what are the, not so much what's the secret sauce, but do you have any specific rhythms and routines that help you sustain what you do?
So I was wondering if you wanted to know current ones or homeschool ones?
Oh, either. I mean, but current is okay. Good already. But if you had some homeschool ones, then
I do.
That's great
so
too.
I'll start with what I do now. I live alone. So it is quite the contrasting experience after having seven people house for, you know, those 20 some odd years.
Yeah.
But I do enjoy it. I was surprised. I thought I would not like it. And as it turns out, it suits me at this stage of life. So I start my day with vocal warm-ups because I have a voice condition. So that's always first on the list. I blow bubbles into water and I play a kazoo.
I love it.
So I do that first. At some point in the day, I walk 3 miles. And right now it's fall and gorgeous in Ohio. So that's a real treat. And I listen to podcasts.
Yes.
So that's fun. And I try to get outdoors every day, even in the coldest of weather. I have taken Charlotte's injunction that you need to be outdoors every day to heart. And even when the weather is terrible, and that has really transformed my relationship with winter,
right,
is being courageous enough to put on the warm clothes and get out
and get
in
out.
The snow and in the sleet. So That one is a Charlotte one. And then finally, I am a huge sports fan. And so the way I unwind at night is when sports are in season, I am sportsy. I just
so I read that about you recently, because I couldn't be more opposite, but I love that about you. I think it's and I can imagine you shouting at, well, as protecting your voice at the same time, but being very passionate, shouting your team on.
Oh, completely. Yes. And the man in my life is equally a sports nut.
Oh, well, there you go.
Even have rival jerseys. And, yes. But that's I find fun. So the reason I love sports, I love to share this with people who are so meaning driven. I love sports because it's all the emotion and none of the meaning.
Yes.
So I can be wildly into them and it doesn't cost me any of my life points.
Right.
So that's why I like
sports. That's great. That's a great reason. So what about when you were homeschooling? Did you have some things that kept you going?
I did. Homeschool for me, the main memory I have of it is a cup of tea.
Yes.
I had a British midwife when I was pregnant with my first child. And she made us tea at all of my prenatal visits, which shocked me. I said, I can't drink caffeine. And she said, you know, Julie, do you really think British women give up tea just because they're pregnant?
Absolutely not.
So I got addicted to tea during pregnancy, which sounds really funny to Americans. But yes, tea was sort of my comforting source of companionship. Aww. I would wake up, listen to the radio or listen to a book on tape. Back then, our audiobooks were on tape.
Yes.
And my kids would sort of play for about a half hour while we all woke up. And then we would start the day with breakfast and a read aloud and roll from there. And I tried to always keep a book going for myself. They weren't always about homeschool, by the way.
Okay.
I thought it was really important to read widely. I think Charlotte's influence there was important as well.
Yeah, very much so.
You know, you'll remember the exact quote, but what are the four books you're always supposed to be reading?
Yeah, three books. So, gosh, and now I'm going to forget. Now I'm on the point. But one is, she describes it as a stiff book, which is basically a hard one. A novel, and then... something a little bit more moderate, and I can't remember how she described that, but basically a slightly easy one, a novel, and then a stiff book.
I feel like I couldn't do them all at once, but I could do them in sequence. And and I also became much more of a student of poetry during those years.
Lovely.
And so that was a nice way to round out reading as well.
So I mean, you just kind of alluded to it a little bit there, but I'm really big myself on, and also encouraging others on staying, as Charlotte would say, intellectually alive, you know, that constant growth, and not just kind of, you know, oh, I'm going to do a PhD, but the whatever you can do. I mean, I love your emphasis on awesome adulting. I've always loved that. Mm. And I think we have to, and some of that is celebrating who you are and the stage of life you are, but some of that is being a continuous learner.
Totally.
And I have grown into that more and more, but also trying to encourage other people that. Is there anyone that you think people should be paying attention to at the moment, or anything that you think as homeschool mums, you know, oh yeah, you should be reading this person, or this would be great for you? Is there anyone that stands out at the moment for you?
Yes. I'm so happy you asked me this question. And I should just, as a caveat, tell you I'm in the middle of reading the book. It's not, I haven't finished it.
Okay.
But I've heard her on a podcast, and I think this book would be a fabulous read, especially for people in education. So the author is Goldie Muhammad, and I'll spell it for you in an email so you can give the right spelling.
Amazing. I'll link to it. Yeah, thank you.
Yes. But the name of the book is Cultivating Genius.
Oh, wow.
And yes, an equity framework for culturally and historically responsive literacy. Now, here is the reason I love this book. First of all, she divides thinking into and learning into four categories. And those categories are literacy, criticality, skills development, and identity. So she's got these four categories. Actually, one of them is intellectualism. Sorry, let me look at that again. Intellectualism, criticality, identity, and skill development. And she is drawing from 19th century American Black literary societies for her research.
That's amazing. Wow.
So the correspondence with Charlotte Mason is staggering. Like, I keep reading this saying, oh my gosh, this is what Black Americans had to do post-Civil War when they still were being denied education to become brilliant intellects.
Right.
And I wanted to read you this one quote.
Ooh, because yes.
You are literally going to think that this came from Charlotte Mason. And this is, yes, this is from the Colored Reading Society of Philadelphia for Mental Improvement. Okay.
Okay. I'm
Doesn't
ready.
Already sounds,
already sounds amazing.
Yeah. The first object of education is to exercise, and by exercising, to improve the faculties of the mind. Every faculty we possess is improvable by exercise. This is a law of nature. The acquisition of knowledge is not the only design of a liberal education. Its primary design is to discipline the mind itself, to strengthen and enlarge its powers, to form habits of close and accurate thinking, and to acquire a facility of classifying and arranging, analyzing and comparing our ideas on different subjects. Without this preparatory exercise, our ideas will be superficial and obscure, and all the knowledge we acquire will be but a confused mass thrown together without arrangement and incapable of useful application.
Wow.
What?
I wanted to kind of make noises while you were reading, but I don't want to spoil that moment. That was incredible. That's going straight on my my Amazon basket after this interview.
Unreal. Wow. And here's the thing that I think we should take from that message and our whole conversation. We keep thinking we can get somewhere with a chaotic mass of information
right
before we have patiently classified it, arranged it, thought about it, been deeply related to it, exercised it, practiced it.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And here we're being told by this sort of powerhouse of educational insight that fell on humanity in the 19th century in England, in America, whether you were a white kid in the school or in a Black literary society, the message was pretty uniform. When that happens at any moment in history, I want everyone to just go, oh,
yes.
It's like revelation yes. being dropped on us.
Yes.
Let's actually be patient and become connected to it and make it meaningful for ourselves and forget all those other people who are in the chaotic mass.
Right.
Don't let them influence you. Be patient. Exercise your mental faculties. Arrange and classify. Practice.
Oh, absolutely so brilliant. I was my younger two children and I are memorizing quite a long Wordsworth poem at the moment, and every so often, like this morning, they were like, how many more verses have we got? And I said, and like, we just do a few lines a week, you know, and they get it, they're doing really well. But I said, this is like a workout for a part of your brain. We're getting that muscles going. I said, and yes. You know, and I was trying to explain to them, it's not like we're going to put it on camera or do a show. We're doing this for our brains, for our mental capacity, for our to put something in there. And they were like, okay, let's keep going. Let's keep doing this. But
oh, it's so brilliant. I remember this youth pastor telling my son, Noah, have you memorized any Shakespeare yet? And we were at a point where we were watching Shakespeare and reading Shakespeare's stories. And Noah, who was only 9 at the time, said, no, I haven't memorized any. He said, every literate person should have Shakespeare in their pocket at any time you can whip it out. So he and Noah decided to memorize the prologue to Romeo and Juliet. And that became like a rite of passage in our family.
Oh, that's great.
To be a literate person, you had to be able to whip out the prologue at any moment in time.
Oh,
as
I love
a party
that.
Trick, right?
Yes.
But what a beautiful envisioning of a young mind from a college kid.
That is like, so I just good. Thought,
yeah. Imagine if we were challenging our video game playing kids to use their brains in that way, simultaneous to the game playing. I'm not saying to
absolutely.
Not do that,
yeah.
but why don't we see it as a challenge the same way as beating a level?
That's
hey.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. I mean,
that.
my 12-year-old is memorizing Wordsworth in the morning, and designing, you know, stuff on Photoshop in the afternoon. I mean, that's our life, isn't it? You know, that's,
I love it.
And it's so incredible. Julie, this has been amazing. How would you wrap up this? Is there a burning message at the moment for the homeschool community? If you could possibly say it in a few words, what do you want us to grasp in 2020 as homeschool mums?
It is completely worthy work.
Yes.
To devote yourselves to the education of your children. And because it is worthy work, it's okay to put in effort. It's okay if it feels hard sometimes. It's okay not to know yet. That is what homeschooling is. Homeschooling is not a method that you can master. It is a journey. It's a process. It's a performance as you're doing it. It's not something you prepare and do later. It's something that is your unique section of life, these 10, 12, 15, 20 years that you'll never get back. And because it's worthy work, you have to include your kids in that equation. Their wants, their needs, their desires, their tastes, what they do and don't like are a factor. Be more interested in that aspect of your homeschool than all the big long lists you find on the internet about what you should be doing. And you'll get there. That's how you'll get there.
Friends, before we leave, I just want to say a huge thank you to everybody who has been sharing and singing the praises of the Modern Miss Mason podcast on Instagram and Facebook and stories. I'm just loving seeing how much you're enjoying them and how much they are helping you. Thank you also to everybody who has tapped on the 5 stars on the podcast platform and also left a review. And as you know by now, the reviews aren't really for me. They are for any other home educator who is looking for quality and peaceful input into their Charlotte Mason journey. So if you have a moment today, I would love it if you could just pop onto the podcast platform, tap those 5 stars and just a few words about how this podcast is helping you at the moment. If you want to know more about the Charlotte Mason philosophy, one of the things you could do is sign up for my Charlotte Mason Unboxed course. You just need to tap on the details in the podcast app of this episode, and there is a link tree to everywhere I am across the internet, and there is a specific link on there that's a Charlotte Mason Unbox. So head over there today, have a look. You can scroll before you enroll, have a really good look at the content of the course before you commit to signing up to that. But I'd love to see you over there. Thank you for listening. Don't forget, if you loved it, share it with a friend, pop it on your social media, WhatsApp the link to your homeschool group. And to help even more people find us, why don't you take a moment to click those 5 stars on the podcast app and leave a gleaming review. You can find me on my website on modernmissmason.com or on Facebook and Instagram, most days, again, on Modern Miss Mason. Have a delight-filled week. I'll be back here next Monday.